This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about the protests that happened across Indiana this weekend with three reporters who covered them. Joining me now is Eric Weddle, an education reporter for WFYI in Indianapolis. Hi, Eric.
Hey, Matt. How are you doing?
Doing okay. Lauren Chapman is also with us. She's our digital producer for Indiana Public Broadcasting. Lauren, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Ella Abbott is also with us. She's a multimedia reporter at WBOI in Fort Wayne. Welcome, Ella.
Hi.
And we will also be cutting to the governor's press conference, which will be held live at 1:30 as part of our special coverage of the protests that took place in Indiana. And Eric, we'll start with you. There were multiple days of protests here in Indianapolis, as there were in a lot of other cities across the country. When did you first head out, and what was it like in the beginning?
Well, yeah, on Friday we headed out to see what was going on in Monument Circle. There'd been people there, you know, for most of the day, protesting around there. And at some point, a lot of people headed into the street and kind of marched very peacefully throughout downtown for about an hour or so, until there was a call from one of the people kind of leading the march, had kind of announced, you know, we shut the city down. We met our point. It's time to go home now. And then that was when some people began to leave and other people began to head back to the Monument Circle. And that was shortly before the police began to arrive again.
Lauren, you also reported on the protests in Indianapolis. What was it like when you first went out?
Yeah, so I went out Friday night, a couple hours after Eric was already out there. I arrived in front of the State House where police were beginning to march protesters back away from the building. And I saw the first thing that I saw actually was an officer chasing after and arresting someone that they had claimed had perpetrated property damage, things along those lines. But the overwhelming feeling was a lot of anger and a lot of calls for, you know, justice, for being heard from protesters to police. Most of what I saw on Friday was that.
And Eric said he was out earlier and he saw largely peaceful protests. Would you describe what you saw as being that? Or since time had passed and it had gotten a little later, had it gotten a little out of control, did it seem?
So I arrived after some of the vandalism had happened. The reason I ended up parked in front of the State House was because I knew that that was where Jack's Donuts was. So it was post, window smashing. It's not even something that I would necessarily qualify as violent, right? Making the delineation between property damage and like physical violence, that, you know, even protesters who were angry with police were not coming at police. They weren't throwing things at police. From just my very limited experience of this one particular corner of this fairly large scale protest just on Friday night. And even when police began to march protesters back, protesters were still keeping some distance from police and using a lot of the language that we've seen in previous protests with, you know, hands up, don't shoot, folks kneeling on the ground, folks, you know, chanting, I can't breathe, things along those lines.
Ella, you're a reporter at WBOI in Fort Wayne. I understand you first reported on the protests Friday. What was the situation like that? What was it like at that point?
Yes. So I was there pretty much at the start on Friday. It was very calm. There was a lot of chanting. People were staying on the sidewalk. They were kind of down the road in front of the Allen County Courthouse, but they were, for the most part, they were staying on the sidewalk. There wasn't a police presence yet. There was a lot of cars driving down Clinton honking in support. There was some traffic started to slow to sort of either take videos or just show solidarity with the protesters. I left before things got crazy because it was so calm and orderly that I didn't expect much to come of it. And then in between the hour of me leaving and me getting home, I was suddenly getting an influx of text messages and Twitter messages and things sent to me about what was happening. And my understanding is that protesters had started to stop traffic and had worked their way into the street, and they were blocking traffic and some cars were stopping for them. And their drivers were getting out and joining in, and it was causing a traffic jam, which led to police presence.
I've read a lot about some of the disruptions and the violence and the property damage in Indianapolis, but I'm less aware of what happened in Fort Wayne. Was that the extent? Was it just stopped traffic, or were there other developments as the weekend wore on?
As the night wore on, there was more. Protesters started to get agitated, and the police said that they were having rocks and water bottles thrown at them. There was a lot of broken windows around downtown when I was there Saturday morning. But there was also a lot of cleanup efforts Saturday morning to clean up the broken glass. So by the time I even got there, the windows were boarded up. Most of the glass was off of the sidewalk, but there was quite a bit of property damage.
Lauren, you mentioned some of the businesses near Monument Circle, or rather near the State House, Jack's Donuts being one of them. Were they a target of some of the vandalism?
Yes. There was, over the course of the weekend, there were a lot of businesses that were targeted for vandalism, including the downtown Sheridan. On Saturday night, as I was trying to get back to my vehicle in order to get photos and video to our digital team, I saw folks who were running into the TJ Maxx to grab merchandise and flee. There were a lot of downtown businesses that were vandalized, that were hit. The interesting thing from my personal experience with that one instance at the TJ Maxx, and I didn't stick around very long because I was trying to meet up with another reporter at that time. Was that the majority of folks who appeared to be looting did not appear to be a part of the protest. They had driven in. There were a couple of folks who were idling outside of the TJ Maxx as somebody else was running in to grab things and then run back into a vehicle.
Ella, was there anything that looked like looting in Fort Wayne that you know of?
I don't believe there was. Other than the property damage, I don't believe that there was any looting. I could be wrong on that. I didn't see any personally. Saturday evening, I was there most of the day, and I didn't see any property damage myself. I didn't see anybody getting violent. Mostly people were just trying to close streets down.
Eric, what did you hear? Let's go big picture here. What did you hear from protesters about why they were there?
Well, I think early Friday and Saturday, you had people that were very focused on wanting to bring change, not just, Indianapolis, but kind of bring awareness as part of this national movement that we're seeing right now for police accountability and racial justice. And that was what you heard very loud and clear during the protests before they officially ended during the weekend. I think you were hearing different methods for that as the protests ended and some of the rioting began. Sunday morning, faith leaders, they gathered to call for a lot of change, particularly involving the police. They would like to see police training to de-escalate violence. They've called for more mental health supports and a different type of accountability review for officers if they are involved in any kind aggression or violence towards people. And so those were some of the demands that you heard. Indianapolis, there was a shooting this month by the police of Deshaun Reed, and people involved in the protest, you know, have demanded that the officer be named for that shooting. That has not been officially named yet, and for there to be a special prosecutor named for that investigation, which also has not happened yet. So those are some of the demands that I heard throughout the weekend. Mm.
Ella, there seems to be a good bit of consistency between the protests, I mean, nationwide, not just within Indiana. What did the protesters in Fort Wayne tell you, and what message did you hear in the speeches given there?
So Friday night, I was able to speak with the woman who organized the initial protest. And from her, I got a lot of frustration. She talked about being tired of just seeing things happen, and she wanted to actually do something, and she wanted to feel like her voice was being heard, which I think was consistent throughout the weekend. Is this was just a lot of people coming together because they wanted to be heard, and that was something that we heard a lot from the speakers on Saturday as well, was just frustration with the disconnect between the community and police and the loss of voice.
Hmm. Lauren, we heard about tear gas being used by police in Indianapolis. Was it clear why it was being used? You were there when some of it was dispersed.
Yes, I was hit with tear gas 6 or 7 times.
Wow.
Over the course of 3 days. So my lungs are still hurting a little bit.
Got about 60 seconds left, but
yeah.
That is incredible that you were in the mix and you got actually hit with it. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was entirely designed to break up the protesters. The effectiveness is certainly questionable.
We will be back after a quick break to talk more about the protests in Indiana over the weekend. Of course, protests have been happening all throughout the country after the death of George Floyd 1 week ago. I am Matt Pelzer. We are back with that conversation and the governor's press conference in just 2 minutes. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. Today we're talking about the protests that happened over the weekend in multiple cities across the country and, of course, in Indiana with reporters who covered them. And we're joined again by Eric Weddle, education reporter for WFYI in Indianapolis. Lauren Chapman is our digital producer for Indiana Public Broadcasting. And Ella Abbott is multimedia reporter at WBOI in Fort Wayne. And a quick note, Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb is scheduled to hold a press conference about what happened this weekend in about 10 minutes. We will cut to a live feed of that as soon as it happens. And Lauren, before the break, you said that the effectiveness of the tear gas used by police in Indianapolis was questionable. Can you expand on that? What impact did it have?
Yeah, certainly. There's from my experience in these crowds, certainly, you know, the evening protests where things had already become violent, where vandalism was already happening, it was clear why police were setting off aerosol irritants like pepper spray, tear gas, etc. however, Sunday night, that particular experience certainly created a lot more chaos than I think maybe would have been effective in order to peacefully disband protesters. That was hard to describe, the way that everything changed almost immediately as soon as those aerosol irritants were set out. And my question, kind of overarching with the IMPD response, is the efficacy of that kind of escalation, whether this was actually an attempt to de-escalate, or if it was an escalation of events. Every time that tear gas was set off, it felt like there was an escalation as opposed to de-escalating a large throng of people who already have concerns and distrust over a department that, frankly, a couple of weeks ago were responsible for the deaths of 3 people in less than 24 hours. Mm. So that's that. There's a larger context on top of also the fact that you're dispersing, you know, 10, 15, 25 canisters of tear gas into a large crowd of people who are then all of a sudden running in the opposite direction as well.
Mm. Okay. Eric, there were two shootings in Indianapolis. What do we know about what happened? Do we know much?
No, not much has actually been released regarding those shootings, other than the identities of each of the men. Chris Beatty, who I can't say if I'm pronouncing their names correctly, so forgive me if they're wrong. Chris Beatty was 38, and he was known around town, working mm-hmm. at a nightclub. Dwayne Murrell was 18. And so they have not released, you know, if those related to what was going on the nights on Saturday. One person has been arrested who turned themselves in, though the police really have not said yet which case that was related to. But we do know that they happened, you know, late Saturday.
And you talked about and reported on an event led by faith leaders in Indianapolis, and we're going to listen to a soundbite from that event. This is part of a speech by Pastor Jones. Let's listen now, and then we'll hear more about it.
Because the time is now. The opportunity is at hand. And the window of opportunity is only open for a short while. We cannot sit on the dock of the bay and watch the tide roll away, but we must come together and make sure that America lives up to its slogan, that this is the land of the free, no matter what color you are, and this is the home of the brave, and we are going to act now.
Eric, a lot of passion, a lot of energy from that speech, and of course, I'm sure from the other speeches. Can you tell me mm-hmm. more about that event?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was organized by Faith in Indiana, so it was a lot of faith leaders from different religious beliefs at the State House. There were hundreds of people there, and I think, as we said earlier, someone said earlier, you know, there's a lot of anger that we're hearing from protesters, and there was anger at that event. I think, you know, just frustration. That black people are being killed repeatedly by the police. And the Reverend said that explicitly during that time. And they called, you know, they wanted peaceful protests, but they also said that they understand why people are destroying things, why people are acting out across the country in such anger. And during that, the pastor basically said to take that anger and put it into the ballot box. He called for everyone there to vote out any state, local, or federal officials who don't explicitly call out racism or police brutality. And that was kind of, you know, the message that was there by everyone. And they also read out a list of demands that I mentioned earlier about reforms here in Indianapolis.
And we have another soundbite from your reporting, Eric. This one was from a protester named Anthony King. Let's listen to that, and then we'll talk about it.
After this protesting, I do want everybody to come together and actually demand what we want. The protesting is cool. This showing them that we're serious, but we have to demand what we really want. Like a hostage situation, we have to demand what we want and then see what happens.
It's bigger than just Paul Dara.
This system is broken. It's not meant for us to succeed. It's really meant for us to be employees and be slaves.
What was it like talking to Anthony and his companion? Did it seem like their message was consistent with that of the entire event?
Yeah, I mean, I believe so. I mean, I think it's, you know, I think it's, it goes back to anger. I mean, I think what both of them are just trying to say was, you know, this, the protesting isn't coming from just these single events of police brutality. It's more of a systematic issue of racism. And that's what he was saying, with the system is broken, because, you know, just fixing police transparency or accountability, he says, you know, isn't going to fix all the problems in terms of the ability for Black people to become homeowners or to get certain types of jobs or to have higher incomes. So he was trying to, you know, I think really express the frustration of there's so many issues that he wants to be dealt with. And he hopes now people are focused on this across the country, and they take awareness of that, and different groups get together from leadership on down to work on these issues.
It sounds like it was very much evolved into sort of a big picture thing. I mean, what did people there say about what they plan to do next? Was there talk of future protests?
I mean, I think, you know, right now, yeah, I think people do not, there's not really an end right now for the type of protest. I mean, I think it depends who you speak to, you know, as in a lot of people are calling for peaceful protests. And I think right now we're just going to have to wait and see. I mean, each city right now in the country, as you'll see in the news, you know, has a different environment happening. There's different reasons on the ground for what's going on. So I think for Indianapolis and Fort Wayne and Lafayette, we're just going to have to, you know, wait and see what does happen. And I think, hope, you know, we'll probably hear something very soon, you know, from the governor about what his response is going to be to all this.
Indeed, the governor is scheduled to talk at 1:30. It is almost 1:30, although I'm hearing from our technical director that the feed may be happening after 1:30. And so we will keep our guests for a little while longer. We're talking to Eric Weddle, an education reporter for WFYI in Indianapolis, who covered some of the Indianapolis protests. Lauren Chapman is also with us. She's our digital producer for Indiana Public Broadcasting. And Ella Abbott is multimedia reporter at WBOI in Fort Wayne. Ella, I'd like to ask you about some of that big picture message that we heard from Eric. I know we don't have any tape from Fort Wayne, but did you get to talk to anyone individually? And did you hear a similar message?
Yes, I definitely did. I was able, as I said before, I was able to talk with the woman who organized the first protest on Friday. And again, it was just a lot of that frustration. There were a few faith leaders who came on Saturday and spoke, and it was a lot of it was a message of unity, a message of peace. They talked about wanting to get their point across and discouraging property damage and any violence. And this was Saturday, so it was after the property damage on Friday. But there was a larger theme of unity as well. It was a diverse group in ages.
Ella, I think we're going to have to cut to the governor right now. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thanks to all of our guests. We'll go live now to Governor Eric Holcomb.
Gross, violent, and fatal injustice against Mr. George Floyd has turned into anything but a proper time of mourning. My prayers continue to go out to the Floyd family, and I want them to know of the so many Hoosiers of all races who seek to honor his legacy by committing ourselves to righting these types of injustices. And Lord knows we have our work cut out for us. George Floyd's last gasp, his final words, "I can't breathe," haunts and should forever remind us that every breath that we take, every breath that we have left, should be devoted to making sure what happened to Mr. Floyd never happens again. And those responsible for his loss of life will be held accountable to the fullest extent of the law. All Hoosier citizens should know peacefully protesting and demonstrating for this cause is a noble one, rightly protected by our First Amendment. In fact, I hope the peacemakers continue to express themselves and not allow their message to be overwhelmed by the troublemakers seeking to administer pain on the innocent. For make no mistake about it, no citizen has a right to destroy, vandalize, or threaten another Hoosier's safety or property. Coordinated efforts to unlawfully breaking in and entering, shooting at law enforcement officials, and setting fires has taken on a tone of organized crime and will be responded to accordingly. Therefore, Indiana will continue assisting local communities with the needed state resources to enforce the rule of law and protect lives and property. Our state police and National Guard personnel will occupy positions that defend all law-abiding citizen rights. Only then can we as a state and a nation make systemic progress on topics that have for too long eluded our true and aspired to national identity. Indiana seeks to be a leader on this front, not just with more talks or town halls, but more importantly in our actions, in our agenda revolving around inequity and disparity at the city, state, and national levels. We must harness, not squander, the energy generated in the aftermath of the Floyd injustice by creating a to-do list and prescribe those action steps that address better health care access, affordable housing, educational opportunity, job training and placement, urban economic development, access to capital, and yes, criminal justice reform, as well as policing standards and race relations for those disproportionately affected. This will take all of us, we the people, activists, public and private sectors, clergy, and wise civil rights leaders, forming a statewide coalition that calls for nothing less. In the meantime, violence in the streets makes progress on all these fronts harder and sets us back from forming that more perfect union. One of God's greatest gifts to us all is the ability to choose between right and wrong. For most, it comes natural. For others, it saddens me that their hearts and minds have hardened, and their anger demonstrates itself through destructive behavior designed to instill fear in the innocent. This cannot and will not be accepted. Indiana, we don't have more time or lives to lose. I implore every Hoosier, whether in the privacy of your own home or at a peaceful demonstration, to use your breath, your will, in efforts that bridge, not divide. Only then will these tense and turbulent times give way to the more optimistic days ahead. And now I'd ask the superintendent of the Indiana State Police, Doug Carter, and Brigadier General Dale Lyles, Adjutant General at the Indiana National Guard, to each give us an update on your areas of responsibility over the last 72-plus hours and your and our posture going forward, and then we'll all three be available for any questions you might have. Superintendent Carter.
All over Indiana these last few days, the Indiana State Police has and will continue to deploy any and all assets we have to support local communities throughout our great state. Hundreds of troopers, our aircraft, special operations personnel have been deployed to cities like Hobart, Merrillville, Michigan City, LaPorte, South Bend, Fort Wayne, Kokomo, Anderson, Lafayette, Terre Haute, Indianapolis, Jeffersonville, Sullivan, Tell City, Evansville, and maybe even a few other rural areas. We stand in support of our local law enforcement agencies, their leaders, but most importantly, we stand with our citizens. I spoke to the governor many times over these last few days, as well as his senior staff. Please know how grateful we are, Governor, for not only your unwavering support, but also for the empathy you have shown during this most difficult time for all of us. The changes that have occurred to our daily routines and in our profession because of the global pandemic and now civil unrest, some places even anarchy, in our very communities is difficult for all of us to comprehend. from a very personal perspective, and as I shared with all members of the Indiana State Police last night, I stood outside the east doors of the State House, not too far from where we stand today, and looked east towards Monument Circle late Saturday night and into the early morning hours of Sunday, which frankly is one of my favorite downtown views. The beauty of Monument Circle, the majesty of the many spectacular statues which represent historical events that have allowed us to be free and civilized, are extraordinary. But the view during that period of time this past weekend was anything but civilized. The view was obstructed by hundreds of angry, violent, and destructive people. I could see fires, taste the smell of tear gas, and the view of broken windows, trash, and debris was simply overwhelming to me. The view of the city of Indianapolis and many other cities in our state and around our country are unrecognizable today. This is not the fault of the owners of the Five Guys restaurant, the T-Mobile store, other restaurants or places of business in Indianapolis, other cities in Indiana, and around our country. Please do not blame the frontline law enforcement officers that are sacrificing so much and would die for the very people that have so badly damaged our communities. The people you must hold accountable are people like me. As a leader in this profession, I and so many others like me around our great nation must hold our officers accountable, and you should expect nothing less of me. We are human beings just like you, and the death of George Floyd is a stern reminder that we and what I represent have much left to do. I'll start with an I'm sorry. I was asked by many protesters on Saturday, quote, "What do you expect us to do?" And my only response to them that I could muster was not this. I want to recognize the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department and thank the rank and file. I don't think any of us ever thought we would witness what occurred over these last 72 hours. You stood with and for your community, and I, for one, am eternally grateful. The same appreciation goes to all of the other agencies within Indiana, as this has affected every one of you, every one of your officers, every one of your family members, and your citizens. Hear me loud and clear. I have said many times that law enforcement is not without sin, and we collectively own some of this distrust. But this is not the way to solve complex, real, and historic conflict. We must acknowledge our past. We must understand our mistakes in my profession. And we must take a step forward. If we don't, we will never heal as time goes on and we give this hate and this anger and this distrust to the next generation.
I'm Brigadier General Dale Isles, the Adjutant General for the Indiana National Guard. On Saturday, members of the Indiana National Guard Reactionary Force were alerted and placed in standby to provide civil support to the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department, the Indiana State Police, and communities throughout Indiana. The Reactionary Force is an Indiana National Guard unit specifically designated to provide the governor with a rapid capability to respond quickly to events like we saw this weekend. Members assigned to this unit are pre-selected and trained explicitly in operations for defense support to civil authorities. The unit's preparedness and overall readiness is validated through a series of training exercises aimed at ensuring the men and women assigned are ready and capable to perform tasks like the crowd control, traffic control, security to critical infrastructure, and other interagency operations. No request for deployment of the National Guard Reactionary Force emerged on Saturday. On Sunday, with the support of the Indiana State Police, soldiers and airmen from the Reactionary Force established a presence at state properties in downtown Indianapolis to protect centuries-old monuments that were defaced on Saturday. Also on Sunday, airmen from the 122nd Fighter Wing located in Fort Wayne, Indiana, deployed to provide support to the Fort Wayne Local Police Department. The Indiana National Guard is the fifth largest National Guard state in our nation, with over 12,000 men and women serving their state and nation. Because of our size and strength, we continue to provide necessary support to COVID-19 operations, as well as defense support to civil authorities. The National Guard will continue to support food bank operations, COVID-19 testing, PPE warehousing and distribution, support to Indiana Department of Corrections, and other COVID-19 associated missions. The Indiana National Guard stands ready to assist local communities, and we will continue to protect property and ensure the safety and well-being of all Hoosiers.
And with that, Rachel, we'll take any questions.
Lindsay Erdody, the Indianapolis Business Journal.
Afternoon, Lindsay.
Good afternoon, Governor. I was wondering if you could comment on how long you plan to have the National Guard activated at state properties, if you could clarify a little bit more about which state properties they're at, and also if you guys know how much damage has been done to state properties.
The answer is we're taking it day by day and processing intelligence as it comes in. And we will move the required resources to places where it's needed. So we are not projecting or telegraphing, maybe even more importantly, what and when we deploy. Having said that, we were in four distinct locations, state property, on Saturday. And Adjutant General, you might want to talk about the presence at each of those, but they were state properties. I do have to say that this unprecedented scale of threat and violence toward businesses and people is something that has drawn us to this position. And we seek not just to be reactionary, we seek to be proactive about this. When I see Hoosiers afraid or scared, they need to know that we are pouring in all of the resources available to meet those flashpoints. The superintendent of state police just ticked off about 13, 14, 15 different locations that we were monitoring on a minute-by-minute basis. You mentioned we talked frequently. I think one night I talked to you at 12:30 a.m., and you were off to a meeting at 2:49 a.m. We're going to continue to be nimble, Lindsay, and be available to support local officials. They know best what their communities need. It's our job to be close and on the scene when they need it. And I got to tell you, I want folks throughout the state of Indiana to know that is our priority task, is to slow the spread of this, so to speak. This violence. We're dealing with a virus, and now we're dealing with violence. And so We'll be at this as long as it takes. At the very same time, I hope it wasn't lost that the folks who are peacefully responding to the extreme injustice that was done to Mr. George Floyd, that is a noble cause to not just protest that, but to seek change from it. And so that's why I said we cherish not just this right, but this assignment to get this right.
Abdul Hakim Shabazz, Indy Politics.
Afternoon, Abdul.
Good afternoon, Governor. Something I'm going to tell you a little bit of clarification on. At what point does the state send in the National Guard? Because there was a lot of talk about Saturday night about the National Guard maybe should have been there or maybe to help out. At what point does the National Guard come in? Do you have to wait for the city to ask her to come in, or can you do it on your own?
We don't have to, but we are seeking to work with. Like I said, we believe that the mayors, the local elected officials, know best with our intelligence and theirs. We're sharing constantly on when to supply resources, including force. And so the determination was made to be ready, to be on standby, to be close on one day. The next day, when we saw, as I started to allude to, when we saw private and public property being destroyed, we set foot on state property to be close. It's just unconscionable to me that folks would threaten someone else's life and or go to these monuments that were referred to that represent men and women that gave their lives so that people would have that First Amendment right to assemble peacefully, to speak peacefully in an attempt to make progress. And folks who are seeking to destroy that service and their memories are not in this to peacefully protest. And so we will be on the scene, and we will continue to, first and foremost, work with local officials throughout our state, statewide, and arrive at an answer that is in unison. We want to work together. We want to complement one another's efforts. And that is how we're going to get through this together to those better days.
Rob Burgess, the Wabash Plain Dealer.
Afternoon, Rob.
Afternoon, Governor. I'd like all three of you to answer the following question, if you could. Then I had one for Brigadier General Lyles. During the past few days, there have been several dozen noted instances around the country of clearly credentialed journalists being arrested and outright targeted by police with stun guns, rubber bullets, tear gas, pepper spray, and physical violence. What do you tell those under your command about how to deal with journalists when they give both verbal and visual evidence of their identities? And Brigadier General Lyles, you answered most of my question earlier, but the entire force you have assisting the Second Harvest Food Bank will still be in place despite this deployment?
Well, Rob, fortunately, I don't have to tell Superintendent Doug Carter what to do on this front. I am, quite frankly, amazed, not surprised because I've been around it for a while now, but I am amazed every single time I see these women and men put this uniform on and the restraint that they exhibit in walking toward danger in an effort to defuse it. There are folks who are militant about creating chaos, about using George Floyd's memory and legacy, quite frankly, for their own motivation. And we send in folks who take an oath to defend us and to defend our property. And so in regards to journalists who are out to capture these unprecedented and historic moments. The Fourth Estate, not only do they have the same right, but they should be afforded the same protection. And with that, Superintendent Carter, I'll let you respond. Speak for yourself.
Well, Rob, first of all, I think one of the issues associated with the imbalance that we're currently facing is that we try and attach different scenarios to different parts of the country and different events. I learned a long time ago, I'm not going to criticize a group, an event, a situation, or a response if I'm not actually there to see it, at least on a very small level. We must understand that emotions are high. We did not experience any of those kinds of things that you just described, and I was very aware of them as they occurred, specifically up in the Minneapolis area. It didn't happen here in Indianapolis. And we tried very, very hard to give people that wanted to hurt us very badly, 100 yards from here, the ability to do what they were doing, to spit and cuss and throw rocks at us. For African-American Indiana State troopers to stand there and be ridiculed because of the uniform that they wore. This is personal. It's very obvious to me it's personal to our governor. And I can assure you, Rob, it's personal to me. I said just a few minutes ago, we are not without sin, and I mean every single word of that. And I wish I had a lot of redos in my professional and personal life, and I bet you do too. What we have to do is learn from our mistakes and move on. We can't continue to live in that period.
Yeah, with regard to your question for food bank support and continued support for COVID-19, when we started this over 2.5 months ago, 3 months ago, the governor told me and he told everybody on the task force, whatever it takes, whatever you need, you've got it. And every day that we've been fighting this battle, we've had that pleasure and that resource. And in light of the fact that we have the fifth largest National Guard state in the United States, we have over 12,500 airmen and soldiers. We are fully capable of conducting the COVID-19 risk mitigation strategy, as well as protecting the lives, the safety, and the property of all Hoosiers during this time of turmoil.
Chris Sikich, the Indianapolis Star.
Hello, Chris.
Hello, Governor. I heard there was a conference call with President Trump today where he told you guys to dominate the protesters. What did you think about that call?
Well, it was bumping up until my time that I had to be here, and I wanted to go over my comments. But I think that what the president shared, what the Attorney General Barr shared, what the Secretary of Defense shared on that call, Secretary Esper, was don't get caught watching the paint dry, so to speak, here in Indiana. Don't just be in a reactionary mode, that we have seen this movie before throughout our history. And so we need to make sure that we are properly staged and positioned to meet this moment. They are tracking, as are we, a very organized effort. It's domestic terrorism in the extreme across the country. And no state, no community is immune. When the sun goes down, it's been said, bad things happen. And we're seeing that. We're seeing peaceful protests that start out, as I mentioned, with a noble cause in mind, those seeking to right wrongs of the past, to get us on a better path. We welcome that. We want to be part of that. We want to build that into our agenda going forward. And we can do this. But we are seeing those peaceful demonstrations get hijacked by those who have only one goal in mind, and that is to create chaos and destruction in their path. And they will move on. Town to town, city to city, state to state. And we have to be ready. And we are.
Nikki Kelly, the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette.
Good afternoon, Nikki.
Good afternoon. I had two quick questions. One is, you've mentioned several times you want to work with those who feel injustice. So what is something you will do to try to change the situation? And the second question is, at least in some of the areas like Fort Wayne, the police went with using tear gas to clear roads. Yeah. So my question is just blocking traffic enough to escalate police to that, I guess, level?
Well, first, Nikki, and I think that that is the most important thing to come from this, not just empathizing with folks who have been treated unjustly or sympathizing from a perspective of with family members, but what comes from it. And to me, that comes down to what we have done on many fronts here in the state of Indiana, just speaking from our perspective, and that is, what is built into our to-do list, our jobs, whether it be at FSSA or the Department of Health or the Department of Education, giving folks more access, making sure folks are aware of the tools that are available to them to experience more social upward mobility. These are things that we're going to have to be very clear about and deliberate in our agenda to not just reach out, not just to sit around a table, not just to, as I said, more talk or town halls, but say, can we have your help on this front and this initiative? How do we provide better access to health care? How do we steer in more capital into our urban areas? How do we skill up? Fortunately, in the state of Indiana, we have the wherewithal to do this. Now, I've spent the last few days, in addition to monitoring and directing on a minute-by-minute, hour-by-hour basis, also reaching out to clergy, also reaching out to business owners. That's why I say it's going to take a statewide effort, and everyone is welcome. Matter of fact, more than encouraged, I need you. We need you to be part of the solution. I'm so proud of this state. I love this state. And so many other people do too. And they're pouring out their resources and their abilities and their energies to get through this pandemic and deal with that virus. And now we've got to do the same thing on the violence front. And we will prove that we can. And like I said earlier, we will. Superintendent, she had a question also for you.
Nikki, I think I remember the question about deploying tear gas or just barricades to block streets. There's not a group I wouldn't walk with that wanted to be peaceful. And in the event that that occurs, we'll gladly block those streets, public streets, and do all we can to ensure the safety of those peaceful First Amendment protests. It's a right of every American citizen, and we will never get in the way of that. But it changes when they become illegal, out of balance, destructing property, tearing apart the very essence of who we are as an American people. That changes everything. We had to deploy gas on these very grounds and blocks around here. Over this past weekend, everybody was told that it was going to happen if they didn't disperse. I saw it with my own eyes. That's the expectation. We take no pleasure in that. No pleasure in that. But there comes a certain point in time we have to say enough is enough. And we got there over the weekend.
Russ McQuaid, WXIN.
Good afternoon, Russ.
And a good afternoon, Governor. Can you take us back to Friday night and walk us through with a timetable? When did you start having conversations with Indianapolis Mayor Joe Hogsett? What type of assistance was either offered or requested in what timetable and proportionality? And when were you then able to work with the Brigadier General and the Superintendent and get those assets in place?
Well, from the very beginning, and not just, I know I'll address your specific question about the capital city, Indianapolis, where so much violence did occur and destruction did occur. But from the very outset, way before it spun out of control, our senior team, my chief of staff, Superintendent of State Police Doug Carter, with the IMPD chief and his senior staff, were hand in glove here in Indianapolis. But I don't want that lost, that minute by minute unfolding, and now here we are Monday. I don't want it lost that in addition to those coordinated efforts, we were doing the same throughout the state, city by city. The one of the advantages of the Indiana State Police is we are, these are, and the Indiana National Guard for that matter, these are folks who live in communities throughout the whole state of Indiana. These are folks in the Guard, for example, that have other jobs in addition to what they're being called up to do. And so we not only know the terrain, but we know the leadership in all of these communities statewide. And so it started, our communication and our coordination started before the protests were even assembled. Because obviously we were monitoring communication and receiving intelligence about what could happen. So we were prepared, and that's why where we were Friday, and that's where we arrived on Saturday and Sunday as well. Fully support the steps that not only this mayor, but other mayors around the state of Indiana have taken. In terms of the curfew here in Marion County, in Indianapolis, I think that was very helpful. And we'll continue to try to complement those efforts.
Whitney Downard, CNHI.
Good afternoon, Whitney.
Good afternoon, Governor. My question is, what's your message to Black Hoosiers who see a state legislature that can't even pass pregnancy accommodation bills or tries to pass punitive criminal justice or landlord-tenant bills that would disproportionately affect Black Hoosiers? See these bills and say the legislature's not reflecting our interests. Why should we trust you to do it now? What would be your message to those Hoosiers?
Why should we trust you to?
Well, we have achieved a lot. This legislature has achieved a lot. Are we done? No. You mentioned one that's I'm very personally wedded to, pregnancy accommodations. I would ask the African-American community, of which you cited, to join me, to be outspoken with me, should I get the opportunity to get that across the finish line, because I'm coming back on that. And there are other issues. We did. This legislature passed a hate crimes bill in the state of Indiana. It was needed. We got it done. We've expanded the Healthy Indiana Plan 2.0. We now have a bridge. It's this administration and this legislature that got creative, that covered more Hoosiers than ever before. We have programs that we need to do a better job, me, of making folks aware of how their school, college, higher education can be paid for. Paid for. We're one of the most generous states in the country in terms of providing that academic assistance, post-secondary education. And the list just goes, next level jobs. This is the most bipartisan resource you could imagine. It's getting people, we pay the state 100% to get you skilled up to fill these open jobs. And by the way, even in this time of extremely high unemployment, we need to fill high-wage, high-demand jobs. And we will work with our institutions of higher education. We have to do a better job. Me, the legislature, everyone, regardless of your race, of making communities aware of the resources that are there. But to your point, is there more work to be done? Heck yes.
Adam Wren, Indianapolis Monthly.
Good afternoon, Adam.
Good afternoon, Governor. Do you think that the president's tweets over the weekend and his rhetoric has made your job easier or more difficult, given how he's talked about reporters and also, you know, tweeting out that when the looting starts, the shooting starts?
I've been so focused, Adam, on my job that, to be honest with you, it's not made my job tougher. It might make others, folks may receive those tweets differently, but quite frankly, I've been on the phone with Superintendent Doug Carter or the Adjutant General or Director Steve Cox with Homeland Security or my senior team here in this administration. So to be just blunt and brutally honest, I'm focused on here. So, no, it's not.
Bob, WTHR.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Governor. Wanted to follow up on your comment about Indiana seeking to be a leader to address inequity and disparity. You also mentioned, you know, that more talk and meetings isn't necessarily what's needed right now. In light of this weekend's protests, Indiana faith leaders called for city and state leaders to reform law enforcement policies and to implement additional training to reduce cases of police violence and racial injustice. So my question for you and Superintendent Carter is, do you have any thoughts, any ideas that you've seen, anything specific as far as action steps that you think need to be taken right now to address the issues that are going on, the issues that faith leaders have brought and the suggestions they have, any action steps that you think can be done and taken right now to address those concerns?
Well, right now, and I'll pass the podium to the superintendent here in a second, but right now, and the faith leaders that I have spoken with on a daily basis, I might add, share our same goal, and that is to stop the violence, stop the civil disorder, and stop the unrest so we can have this conversation, so that we can be informed, so that we can write out that to-do list, so where we can find common ground to move forward. And I ended my remarks with more optimistic days are ahead, because if it was silence, if people were in their corners, if people weren't coming together, if people weren't trying to live up to who we want to be, I might be a little bit more pessimistic. But the first and only focus that we need to have right now is to get to a place of calm, of civility. That is the foundation of this all. And are we satisfied with where we are right now? No. Do they have our attention? Yes. They had my attention for a long time, part why I ran for this job, because I wanted to get things done. And so it's not daunting to me to make a list and then get it done. That's what we do. But our first order of business is to make sure that our citizens and our property are safe and protected. No one in the country has seen on a scale like we find ourselves witnessing this level of animosity that's turned into destruction. And that cannot last. That cannot keep going. And that's why you see our efforts, again, from a local, state, and federal partnership. You want to add anything to that?
Now, Bob, you and I think, have had this conversation before. Excuse me. The time to become transparent is not at a time of crisis. So that transparency, that notion of transparency, has got to be a part of who we are. And not just the Indiana State Police, but I'm talking to law enforcement leaders all around the state and even around our country. Transparency is so very important. We can't ask you to trust us if we won't tell you what occurred. and we'll always give you as much information as we can. That's where it starts. Secondly, we have to look back in the rearview mirror and learn from past events. We don't have to go back too much further than just 1992. Seems like a long time ago to some. I remember that period of time very, very well. And that was a time American law enforcement officer and the perception of who we are changed. And frankly, I think we're back in 1992, and I'm so sorry about that. We've lost the confidence in our citizens, and we've lost the confidence of our communities. And I said earlier, we take responsibility. But now you got to help us, because we cannot allow the behavior that we've experienced over the last and seen over these last 72 hours continue. It just simply cannot. That transparency must be real, and it must be each and every day. I could spend so much time talking about that, Bob, but I won't. I think I hope I've appropriately answered your question.
Brandon Smith, Indiana Public Broadcasting.
Afternoon, Brandon.
Afternoon, Governor. You talked about building this to-do list and about getting folks more aware of the resources you already provided. In terms of that to-do list, though, the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus puts together an agenda every single session, which I've been covering for a decade now, and every single session, the vast majority of those initiatives are summarily ignored by the General Assembly. So I guess to go back to an earlier question, why should the folks who are justifiably angry and demonstrating in the streets all across Indiana have any faith that leaders at the Indiana State House will actually do what you say you are going to do?
Well, I can speak for myself, but I can also tell you I have been in touch with the leaders, and we are looking for ways where there is common ground, where we can make advancement. And by the way, the list that you mentioned, we have gotten some things done in the past. I just mentioned the hate crimes bill. It covers every single Hoosier, 6.7 million. A lot of people said that could never be done. We have proven we can do hard things, or things that once seemed impossible. Now, this is the beauty of this building. Lots of folks come from diverse backgrounds and areas of the state. But I do think that our collective conscience has been awakened to the point to where we need to all have a list. Folks need to be, myself included, and I will have. I do have, actually, but I want to add to it, obviously. I think folks need to have a list of, here's the things that I'm working on right now that will promote opportunity for all 6.7 million Hoosiers, we the people, for all. And so that's why they should have confidence. We are a state that has been a leader on so many fronts in terms of opportunity for our individuals. Like I said, is there more work to be done? Yes. Am I looking forward to that work? Yes. And they know it.
Jody Kaufman, WRBI.
Good afternoon, Jody.
Good afternoon. With tomorrow being primary election day, should citizens or will citizens be concerned for safety when they go to vote?
I know the Secretary of State, Connie Lawson, is going to put out some guidance that I hope gives any concerned Hoosier more confidence and comfort in voting tomorrow. I hope if you're eligible, you do vote tomorrow. I will be. And we will still have a presence.
Our final question is from Richard Essex, Wish TV.
Good afternoon, Richard.
Good afternoon, Governor. There's been a lot of talk about starting conversations with different folks and different groups. Has anybody reached out to you, and have you or your staff reached out to anybody to start these conversations?
Yes, yes, and yes. I have ongoing conversations, and when I said, I don't know if I was the one that said we need to start these conversations, because these conversations have been ongoing for some time. And we have made some progress. But we recognize, as has been said by many, we didn't come this far only to come this far. And we will continue to build out our agenda, should I have an opportunity to help realize that agenda.
and we will lead on it. But these conversations did just start this past weekend. These conversations and these relationships are in place for us to make progress. Now, what I think will happen, because of recent conversations, we'll be able to build on this because of these events, because of what is front and center on our minds. We're looking at two crises, the virus and the violence. So what comes from it? What, as the superintendent said, he referred to 1992. I've been talking to a lot of people who have been referring to 1963 and 1968 or 1865. What comes from our actions today when we summons the will to do things that might have been uncomfortable in the past? We'll provide the leadership to accomplish what is needed to give people that confidence that we're willing to take these steps. But I'm telling you, this country was founded on we the people, and we need your help.
That concludes today's briefing. Thank you for joining.
And this is Matt Pelzer, host of All In on Indiana Public Broadcasting. You just heard a live press conference with Governor Eric Holcomb, also Indiana State Police Superintendent Doug Carter and Brigadier General Dale Lyles, Adjutant General of the Indiana National Guard, talking about the protests that happened across the state and the country this past weekend. Join us tomorrow on All In for a conversation on the Indiana primary, which, of course, has been moved to tomorrow, June 2nd. And thank you so much for listening. This has been special coverage on Indiana Public Broadcasting and All In.